Well, that got us off to a nice rousing start. We will rejoice in the Lord and be glad in it. The theme today is Carpe Diem, make the most of the day. And welcome to you all, visitors and friends of visitors. Well done for getting here this morning, given the dreadful weather last night. I was on tenterhooks as to whether I'd get either a choir or a congregation this morning. My name's Harold, for those of you who don't know me. I'm a member of the choir, I'm on the church committee, and occasionally take services when Sarah can't be here. Sarah is away today, along with six other members of the congregation, which is why there are rather a lot of empty seats around. They're somewhere in Worthing, doing something worthy. I'm not quite sure what. I'd like to start with a poem, and this poem was actually written for me and my late partner, and I was rooting around in a drawer the other day and I found it and I thought, oh, this is quite good. It'll be, I can read that today and use it for the theme of the service. It contains one or two things. It's called Onwards and Upwards. Yes, well, it's another day. The papers, the news, the post arrived to challenge me, as if I hadn't challenge enough. Then I look to the sun's first ray, night fleeing like a martyred ghost. New strength flows to free me from the dire fears of the 3 o'clock trough. Yes, today I will be me again, choosing what I will think, being my own self, loving this one day and its life. I will delight if the sun turns to rain. I will tell them I'm in the pink. I will be a cheeky mental elf. I will cut bad feelings with my mental knife. Yet again, each thought is a treasure to have, to hold, to savour. From here I can see through so much. Life is rich to bring me such clarity of thought. And just listen to the music and its measure. Special people bringing me such grandeur. The whisper of art with its velvet touch. Today life gifts me with treasure unbought. Dear, dear close friends who give without reserve. Friends from the past, the now. The sun rises further and I clearly see how much I have given that returns to me. We come together with our various cares to dwell a while in quietness and away from the hurly-burly of metropolitan life, to focus for a time on deeper needs than those material cares which have their place. For now, let us enter that privileged space within, which some call spiritual. Great Spirit, that lives and moves within us, that stirs us to deeds of love, inspire us today to respond to the challenges of the hour with clarity and courage. May we have a ready ear to respond to whatever the call may be, a ready eye that sees beyond the surface, and a ready heart that can offer help to the needy, to build the day in the image of what we prize above all else, when selfish concerns give way to the promptings of compassion. Amen. Now to the first reading. Some of you know I work in an Oxfam bookshop on a Wednesday morning and a Monday morning now. Time drags a little sometimes, so I pick up a book from here or there. And sometimes I fall on a little gem, and this one came to hand, and I thought it would work for this morning. It's called Butterflies on a Wheel. Between 1995 and 2005, because of graduate school, jobs, wanderlust and love, I moved across America 16 times, always by car, always in spring or fall. The drive I made most often was a 2,000-mile stretch between Idaho and Ohio, in either direction, sometimes alone, sometimes with my dog, once with a goldfish named Fran riding shotgun in a one-gallon water jug. Eastward, westward, I travelled the great unspooling latticework of American interstates. Sun-baked juniper flats of southern Idaho, incandescent canyons of Utah, rambling prairies of Nebraska, the deep, heavy damp of Iowa in August. It was on such a drive that I encountered one of the most marvellous things I've ever seen. I was crossing the western half of Wyoming, my car shuddering in a crosswind, big rafts of cumuli cruising above the highway. Everything seemed stripped clean by the wind and light. There was hardly any traffic, only a long hauler now and then. Up ahead, the air grew abruptly darker, a thick band of grey as if a long, opaque ribbon was being pulled along above the road. Within a few seconds, butterflies were exploding across the windshield. The air was thick with them. They cartwheeled over the hood, pieces of their wings lodged and vibrated in the wipers. For maybe a minute, at 60, then 50, then 40 miles an hour, this kept up. Thousands of butterflies breaking over the front of my Subaru. Sometimes their bodies seemed to simply pulverize, as if there were no liquid element to the creatures at all, just a wash of grey powder across the glass. I decelerated to 30, to 20. When I was finally through the band, I pulled onto the shoulder, got out and walked back up the highway. I was maybe 1,000 miles from where I'd started the day before, and nearing that shaky, long-distance daze I would sometimes slip into, when I'd feel as though my brain was trailing way behind my body. Butterflies. A long, shimmering curtain. Millions of them. They practically blotted out the sky. I felt as if some secret had torn free from the earth. Something very private and old. Something much larger than myself. I'd had feelings like this once or twice before, in the water of southeast Alaska, watching the wide, impossibly long silhouette of a humpback whale flow beneath my kayak. Another time in the Gulf of California, watching a fisherman reach over the stern of a boat and seize the thrashing bill of a marlin with a gloved hand, and feeling in my bare feet the sleek, hard flank of the fish striking the underside of the boat. These were feelings that seemed to suggest the world possessed quantities of power I would never understand. The butterflies coursed on and on. Some landed on fence posts, on the asphalt, on the roof of my car. A few landed on my sleeve and beat their wings carefully, thoughtfully, their bodies seeming to quiver in the wind. Every now and then, an 18-wheeler barreled past, its wipers smearing back and forth, and a wreckage of insects tumbling in its wake. I stood on the shoulder of Interstate 80 for maybe 15 minutes, waiting for the tail end of the swarm, staring up into a river of insects, staring up into the limits of my own understanding. Some butterflies, I'd read later, migrate thousands of miles every year. In the fall, nearly every monarch butterfly in the United States, east of the Rockies, will attempt to fly to central Mexico. After particularly rainy winters, painted lady butterflies migrate in the other direction, from Mexico into California, in their billions. Salmon, wildebeest, locusts, storks, swifts, snow geese. What if the torrents of animals migrating past us every year left behind traces of their roots? What if Arctic terns sketched lines through the sky as they poured out of Antarctica and back? What if steelhead trout left thin, colourful filaments behind as they muscled up our rivers? The skies above our fields would become a loom. The continents would be bundled in thread. This year, as the leaves of spring unfurl, it's as if I can feel the energy pumping through the interior of my cells. Mitochondria careering around, charged ions bouncing off membranes, everything arranging and rearranging, some ancient physiological dictate sending its psychotropic messengers galloping through my nervous system. Sell the furniture, scrub out the refrigerator, call in sick. The brain contains always two opposing desires, the urge to stay and the urge to run. 1 hour, our house feels peaceful and snug. The next, I'm yanking open windows at 2 in the morning with my heart thudding against the darkness. 16 trips across the United States, a windshield grimed with heat and fingerprints, a grill caked with dust and insects. And I still think about those butterflies, resting for a moment on my sleeve, a 10-second lull in a merciless journey. This is a highly edited extract from Henry Miller's Ponderings on Reaching the Age of 80. I thought somebody at 80 could teach us something about living in the moment. I had to edit it because some of it is even too raunchy for a Unitarian congregation. But it does shed light on how to behave as the years advance and living in the present. You're not a cripple or an invalid if you have your health, if you still enjoy a good walk, a good meal, with all the trimmings, if you can sleep without first taking a pill, if birds and flowers, mountains and seas still inspire you, you are a most fortunate individual, and you should get down on your knees morning and night and thank the good Lord for his saving and keeping power. If you can fall in love again and again, if you can forgive your parents for the crime of bringing you into the world, if you are content to get nowhere, just to take each day as it comes, if you can forgive as well as forget, if you can keep from growing sour, surly, bitter, and cynical, man, you've got it half licked. It's the little things that matter, not fame, success, wealth. At the top, there's very little room, whereas at the bottom, there's plenty like you, no crowding, and nobody to egg you on. Don't think for a moment that the life of a genius is a happy one. Far from it. Be thankful that you're a nobody. A famous writer once summed it up thus: "The past seems horrible to me, the present grey and desolate, and the future utterly appalling." Fortunately, I do not share this bleak point of view. For one thing, I do not concern myself with the future. As for the past, whether good or bad, I've made the most of it. What future remains for me was made by my past. The future of the world is something for philosophers and visionaries to ponder on. All we ever really have is the present. But very few of us ever live it. I am neither a pessimist nor an optimist. To me, the world is neither this nor that, but all things at once, and to each according to his vision. Picasso once said, "One starts to get young at the age of 60, and then it's too late." By this time, I had lost many illusions, but fortunately not my enthusiasm, nor the joy of living, nor my unquenchable curiosity. Perhaps it was this curiosity about anything and everything that made me the writer I am. It has never left me. Even the worst bore can elicit my interest, if I'm in the mood to listen. With this attribute goes another, which I prize above everything else, and that is the sense of wonder. No matter how restricted my world may become, I cannot imagine it leaving me void of wonder. In a sense, I suppose it might be called my religion. I do not ask how it came about, this creation in which we swim, but only to enjoy and appreciate it. Perhaps the most comforting thing about growing old gracefully is the increasing ability not to take things too seriously. One of the big differences between a genuine sage and a preacher is gaiety. When the sage laughs, it is a belly laugh. When the preacher laughs, which is all too seldom, it's a good job Sarah's not here this morning, it is on the wrong side of the face. The true wise man, even the saint, is not concerned with morals. He is above and beyond such considerations. He is a free spirit. With advancing age, my ideals, which I use as creation in which we swim, but only to enjoy and appreciate it. Perhaps the most comforting thing about growing old gracefully is the increasing ability not to take things too seriously. One of the big differences between a genuine sage and a preacher is gaiety. When the sage laughs, it is a belly laugh. When the preacher laughs, which is all too seldom, it's a good job Sarah's not here this morning, it is on the wrong side of the face. The true wise man, even the saint, is not concerned with morals. He is above and beyond such considerations. He is a free spirit. With advancing age, my ideals, which I usually deny possessing, have definitely altered. My ideal is to be free of ideals, free of principles, free of isms and ideologies. I want to take the ocean of life like a fish takes to the sea. I don't believe there's any prescription for long life. Besides, who wants to live to be 100? What's the point of it? A short life and a merry one is far better than a long life sustained by fear, caution, and perpetual medical surveillance. What is so woefully missing in our world of today? Our grandeur, beauty, love, compassion, and freedom. Now, I know, it's not a very British thing to exhort someone to grab hold of the day. It smacks of the over-eager. I remember asking a friend once how his day was going. Fumbling along, he replied, and he was one of my more lively acquaintances. We don't do enthusiasm very well. I was in my Oxfam shop the other day and came across a volume entitled 60 Ways to Feel Amazing. I was instantly repelled. Thankfully, it was a very slender volume. Be reassured. I'm not talking about trying to induce a facile high in you all. I'm not expecting you to rush out into the high street and proclaim the New Jerusalem. Simply a call to realise the promise of the day at hand. And you're probably already doing it without even knowing about it. Carpe diem. Make the most of today, for tomorrow is uncertain and yesterday is gone. The injunction is to grasp the potential of the day at hand and to make the most of it. Antiquity recognised that life was uncertain, often perilous, and that Dame Fortune's favour was often to reward the fickle and punish the brave. The only certainty we have is that of the present moment. It may be fleeting, but at least we are in it. Despite what contemporary philosophers may tell you about the reliability of sense data, consciousness is the unique quality we share with no other species. We live as sentient beings, and our perception of the world shapes and informs our personality. We are our feelings and our thoughts, and our actions spring from that pool of consciousness. And it is that unique awareness of the present moment that provides the springboard for our involvement in the world around us and within us. We are, or we become, literally what we see, feel, hear, taste, and touch. It follows that the more we open ourselves to the possibilities of the world around us, the more we assume our full humanity. That reading about the butterflies was all about the essential connection with the natural world. It had an immediacy, a sense of exhilaration. You could really feel the writer's engagement with the world around him. And it is by such engagement that we become ourselves. All we have is that sense of the present moment, and we should learn to make the most of it. The extract from Henry Miller at 80 emphasized the quality of curiosity, essential to living life in the present moment, which signals that involvement. This engagement has both an aesthetic and a moral dimension, I think. In the aesthetic sphere, it means allowing the work of art or piece of music or poem or whatever to inhabit us as much as we inhabit it, to fully enter into that representation of the world through another's perceptions. Art can sometimes waken our senses and provide unexpected insights into the world. I well remember the first time I saw a David Hockney painting of the swimming pool, and ever after my perception of the effect of light on water was changed. I saw it anew through his eyes. It is in contemplation, often, that insights are born and we become aware of the eternal. And unlike a piece of poetic vice I once learnt as a child, I do believe that we have time to stand and stare. It is not an escape from the world, but living in the moment at its most intense. There may be infinitely more to be got out of stargazing, my friends, than any amount of navel gazing. In the moral sphere, I believe this quality of being in the moment has its role to play. To be aware and rob today of its glory. Be conscious of the here and now. Remember what the French philosopher Descartes said, "I think, or if you prefer, I'm conscious, and therefore I am." The line carpe diem comes from a line in a poem by Horace. "Don't ask what end the gods have granted to me or to you. Don't play with fortune-telling. How much better to endure what will be? Whether Jupiter has allotted to you many more winters or this final one. Be wise, strain the wine, and scale back your long hopes to a short period. While we speak, envious time will have already fled. Seize the day, trusting as little as possible in the future." Horace says that we must endure that will be, what will be. A hint of philosophical resignation, but still he says, seize that day. John Keating, the character in the Dead Poets Society, says, "Carpe diem, seize the day, boys. Make your lives extraordinary." For Horace, mindfulness of one's mortality is part of the key to realizing the importance of the moment. Others might say it's God's way of focusing our mind on the essentials in life. Time is running away from us, and we must not be fooled by the calendar. There are only as many days in the year as we make use of. And though it is true that every man dies, it is not equally true that every man lives. As Abraham Lincoln once said, "It is not the years in your life that count, but the life in your years." And to misquote a common warning, we must spend our time, for we cannot take it with us when we die. And do not spend it as if you had another in the bank. The flowers in spring do not say, "Not yet." I was reading an article the other day about a nurse in Australia who helped care for the dying, and she has written a book about the most common deathbed regrets amongst her patients. When questioned about any regrets they'd had or anything they would do differently, common themes surfaced. A wish to have had the courage to live a life true to themselves, to express their feelings, and become the person they were truly capable of becoming. to have kept in touch with friends. And a really interesting one, a wish that they had let themselves be happier. So you see, we have a choice even to be happy and avoid being stuck in old habits and customs. And I think that's at the heart of Horace's lines. Let's face it, there's no cure for birth or death, so we must endeavour to make the most of the interval in between. It may not be necessary to ask why we are. Let us instead devote ourselves to the while we are. You may delay, but time will not, and this life is not, I fear, a rehearsal for the next. I held a moment in my hand, brilliant as a star, fragile as a flower, a tiny sliver of 1 hour. I dropped it carelessly. Ah, I did not know I held opportunity. Hazel Lee. Catch, oh catch the transient hour, improve each moment as it flies. Life's a short summer, man a flower. He dies, alas, how soon he dies. Samuel Johnson. It follows that if we live life to the full, then death can hold no sting. As Horace says, remember, you must die whether you sit about moping all day long, or whether on feast days you stretch out in a green field with a good bottle of wine. I must say, I do enjoy that Horace always has a bottle of wine in his hamper. Edith Piaf sang, "Non, je ne regrette rien." For her, along with a life full lived, comes the recognition of personal responsibility. To deny a single day its worth is only to regret the occasions and possibilities we did not embrace. Now is the time to get drunk, to stop being the martyred slaves of time, to get absolutely drunk on wine, poetry, or on virtue, if you please. Charles Baudelaire. Life, if well lived, is plenty long enough. Let the moment you wake up in the morning be the most astonishing. No matter how weary or dreary you feel, you possess the certainty that during the day that lies before you, absolutely anything may happen. And the fact that it practically always doesn't matters not a jot. The possibility is always there. So let's embrace the day and all it has to offer. Make the most of it. As Mark Twain put it so succinctly, let us endeavour to live life so that when we come to die, even the undertaker will be sorry.